likely to lose his life to accidents and danger. No, the latter was out of the question. There was no use gaining such longevity if it made him so afraid of losing it that he never explored its horizons. He considered, briefly, using Selen for something else, but he had no good ideas. What would he do? Conjure a great wall between the Norrin territories and the remains of Gask? Pointless. The Norrin were free, and if Gask ever moved against them, Modigan would once more find himself fighting an alliance of Norrin, Narashtivik, Galador, and Tatornin that Dante and Blaze had forged during the war. He supposed he could use it to improve Narashtivik. But how, exactly? With a new, bigger citadel? Fit every street corner with long-lasting torchstones to make the night safer and more pleasant? An improvement like that seemed trivial. Such a thing could be accomplished through simple hard work. Selen should be reserved for something impossible. Immortality fit the bill. And try as he might, he couldn't think of a better way to help Narashtivik than to serve it unswervingly for centuries. The trees grew shorter, the snows thicker, the air colder. Ast directed them to break north, and they travelled that way for a full day. It added a few miles to this leg of the trip, but it would shorten the distance across the worst of the mountains. He had cracked the map. The minister's drawings didn't identify exactly where Selen might be, but Ast estimated the zone covered no more than 20 square miles. Of horrendous terrain, that would be impossible to comb on foot, but Dante had the deep stone to conclude the search. The mountains were miserable with snow, but while the ponies had been necessary for the crossing into Wesley, Dante found the traversal much easier without them. He could hollow them out a cave for the night, wherever he liked, carve little staircases into the cliffs that would have been impossible for their mounts to climb. Somber assisted him, where possible, shaping the nether into ploughs and cleaving channels through chest-deep snows that would have been a slog. There were times it felt absurd, that they should turn around and hide in the wilds of Wesley to wait until summer. But then they stood on the divide and looked down on the mountains to both east and west. A cloud had hung over them since Lou's death. Few jokes, little talk besides what was needed to guide each other up the next rise. But on the top of the world, they grinned at each other, the mist of their breaths streaming away on the thin Arctic air. They gave themselves a few moments to soak in what they had done, then continued on. Ast's maps, which included a superior pass than the one they'd originally taken into Wesley, led them northwest across featureless snowfields and sudden rocky spurs. They moved as quickly as they could, removing themselves from the heights and the cold, all eyes out for cappers. That! Ast pointed across the whirling powders of snow to a C-shaped ridge, half of which was dark basalt, the other pale limestone, a display that made much more sense now that they knew the chaotic history of these mountains. We're in the right spot after all. I wasn't aware there was doubt, Dante said. Ast flapped the papers of the map, then returned them to the safety of his cloak. We're lucky I was able to find it at all. The map's name a single landmark I knew, the Koenig Horn. We passed it a couple days ago, but I hadn't seen another mark since. Was starting to think we were heading in the wrong direction. Well, thanks for keeping me informed. You're sure about this? The man nodded. There's no mistaking this one. We're where we're supposed to be, assuming the minister knew what he was doing. He's banked everything on it. Dante scanned the landscape. They were still above the tree line, but had come down far enough to see woods elsewhere, including in an oval-shaped valley below them that might be sheltered from the worst of the winds and storms. We'll set up there. Then I'll see if I can follow the deep stone to the star. The descent was trickier than it appeared. They didn't make it down to the valley until late the next morning. Dante excavated a cave 20 feet up a cliff wall, etched steps and handholds up to it, then installed himself within. The others left to scout for any trouble or sources of food. The former seemed likelier than the latter. Dante got out the stone cube and set it in front of him. The cave faced north and received no direct sunshine. As soon as he moved the stone, the cave filled with green light. He had been reaching into the stone each night to make sure nothing had changed, but those had been cursory efforts. Now he gave it every ounce of attention he had. Nothing was different. The signals were a tangled mess, pointing every which way. A lump rose in his throat. His eyes stung. Before he could scream or cry or both, the noise faded, sinking away like a flash of rain on parched ground. Soon all but three of the signals were nothing but white noise in the back of his mind. He took a shuddering breath. With each path discreet and clear, he focused on one, closing his eyes, letting his mind sail along the course of the link. It was difficult to keep his bearings in this nebulous world of an ethereal sensation, but this one felt wrong, too stretched, too distant. A second line felt promising, strong and easy to read. It pointed north-northeast. He tried the third line, but it was nearly as bad as the first. He climbed down from the cave and waited for the others to get back. "I think I have a bead on it. It might not be more than a couple miles from here. If anything happens, if for any reason we're split up, reconvene in the cave." "What exactly do you think might happen?" C said.
"I have no fucking idea."
She chuckled.
"I expected as much."
To lighten their load and provide themselves with a fallback cache in case they were forced into a chaotic retreat, they left a small amount of food and supplies in the cave. This in place, they hiked north across the valley. After smelling little but snow and himself for so long, the scent of the pines was so thick it felt as if Dante could carve slices of it from the air. He hardly noticed, though. He was lost in his head, following the pressure building in the front of his brain. The valley sloped up, pines leaning from the snowy incline like old men lowering themselves to bed. The pressure in his mind increased so slowly, Dante wasn't sure it was happening until they'd crossed the valley, climbed the ridge, and made it a half mile into a plateau strewn with boulders and stunted trees. Much of the snow had been scoured away by the winds, and it made for easy going. Ahead, it looked as if the plateau was creased by another valley, but it turned out to be a short dip that required no extra effort to cross. The bulge in Dante's head mounted to the brink of pain. He began to sweat. He stopped to close his eyes and confirm they were still on target, adjusting course to lead the way up to a butte. The pressure began to peak and ebb, throbbing like his heart, though not nearly so fast. He reached the top of the butte and walked toward the edge 100 yards away. Halfway across, the pressure erupted down his spine and up through the top of his head, as if he were a spike being driven into position.
"It's right here," he croaked.
He scuffed at the snow.
"Help me melt it, Samba."
Together they unleashed the nether on the snows until it ran in rivulets across the thawing earth. He feared they'd have to melt the whole butte, but whenever he stepped more than 5 feet from the spot he'd been spiked, the turgidity of his head soothed, letting him know he was heading the wrong way. He cast around the circle of ground he and Somber had laid waste to. Striated limestone showed beneath the slop and mud. Pretty, but nothing like the deep stone. Dante swept his hands to the side, and the mud swept away too. Damp, white rock steamed in the sun.
"You're sure you're in the right spot?" C said.
Pretty damn sure.
You've done this before, have you? Then it seems like we could have saved an awful lot of travel.
I know it's here, Dante said slowly, because it feels like a Rawn is tapping a rod straight through the top of my skull.
He turned in a circle. A few boulders and trees sat around, branches stirring in a sudden wind. It was as desolate and inconspicuous as every other part of the mountains. Yet he felt certain, in his bones, not to mention his head, this was where Selin had last been used. Where it would return. Where it might already be lurking.
You're supposed to find a black star in the night sky, right? Maybe we're looking in the wrong place.
Sea tipped back her head at the bright blue sky.
She froze. Her eyes and mouth went wide.
Wait, it's not in the sky. It's right underneath you.
What are you talking about?
Dante picked up his right foot, then his left, hunching over for a better look at the ground.
It can't be. It isn't the right kind of rock.
Look underneath it.
He laughed in disbelief. It was so simple. A thought he ought to have had for himself.
In time, perhaps he would have, but this was why you needed others. Their brains operated differently. Frustratingly so too often, but sometimes their shape of crazy was the perfect complement for your own.
He moved to the edge of the circle of bared stone.
Stand back. The others got behind him. He crouched and touched the rock. It had already cooled.
He was still bleeding from the cut he'd opened to melt the snow, and he drew on this again as he moved into the nether within the limestone. It flowed away from a 10-foot square of ground, mounding to the side in a lazy heap.
He could have ripped the whole thing apart in one crack, but that might damage what lay beneath.
He had no idea whether he could harm Selin, but at this point in the game, he had no intention of ruining everything out of haste. Not when they were alone in a stark, white wilderness.
Once he was 3 feet down, dark squares began to reveal themselves within the deep stone.
Silver spangled chunks of deep stone. Dante hesitated, thrown by their sudden appearance.
Not wishing to disturb them, he delved his attention into one of the blocks to learn how it felt, but could detect no difference between it and the limestone. He could, however, feel the borders between them. Using these as a guide, he continued to remove the white rock, revealing long black pillars.
Inch by inch, the surface fell. Limestone draining away.
8 feet down, Dante stopped to take a breather and assess where he was at. By exploring the boundaries of the rocks, it felt as if there might be a floor of deep stone another 8 or 10 feet down. Such painstaking work was tiring, but he'd moved much larger portions of earth before, and he thought he ought to be able to make it to the bottom without flagging.
Spooky out here.
Sea gazed across the line of mountains to the east, the blank fields and powder sparkling in the punishing air.
Like we're someplace we shouldn't be, and the mountains know it.
The mountains always feel that way, Ast said, even when you've made them home.
Why stay here? What happened was so long ago. The world is so big, why not move on?
Because this place is part of me.
Then it seems to me you'll carry it with you, wherever you go.
She shook her head, then her whole body too, like a dog shaking off water.
I can't imagine staying in a place that only reminds you of what you had and lost. Onward and outward, that's what I say, until you find somewhere with more future than past.
Dante thought he'd been thinking of nothing, spacing out. But as he returned to himself, he found that Sea had prompted him to wonder what Blaze was doing. Caught up in a bluster surrounding Selen, he hadn't given his former friend any thought in weeks. Perhaps that was as it should be. He had a city to run, a life to live, and if things went according to plan, that life would stretch across centuries, persist through dozens of generations. He was going to have to get used to loss. He couldn't let himself be tied down by the memory of what was gone, not when there was so much future to be had. He got back to work. Limestone flowed up the side of the pit in an unearthly reverse waterfall of liquid rock, spilling over the lip and puddling on the other side, hardening as soon as Dante withdrew his attention. Clouds moved overhead, piling against the peaks. It was early afternoon, but the sky darkened as if sunset approached. The pillars continued to emerge from the excavation, green squiggles glowing on their sides. Another 4 feet lower, and the last of the limestone trickled up the wall, revealing a floor of solid deepstone. Dante felt a hum in his chest, but the only sound in the air was the snow scraped across itself by the wind. Not wanting to disturb the deepstone, Dante brought back some of the rock he'd removed, shaping it into a staircase along the side of the pit, which was close to 20 feet deep. He glanced across the butte, then started down. The others followed. As he neared the bottom, the green squiggles on the pillars began to fade. Before they disappeared, he saw they weren't swirls in the deepstone. They were runes. He thought he recognized some of the written language of old Narashtivik, but they vanished before he got close enough to be sure. He stepped onto the floor. Snow dusted from above. He wasn't sure if it was being blown in from what was already there, or if it was a fresh fall. He stopped, mid-step. When he'd been looking from above, his perspective had made the tops of the chest-high pillars appear flat and empty. Most were, but one bore a round black object the size of a grapefruit. At first he thought it was a piece of deepstone, but as he moved closer, he saw no silver flecks in its surface. It was perfectly black, matte, lightless, like a hole through the world. A chill swept through him, stronger than any the Wodans could bring to bear. That's it? What's what? As if drawn to it, C's gaze found the ball. No way! Somber licked his lips. If it's here now, why hasn't the minister come for it already? I don't know, Dante said. Maybe he didn't know it was back yet. Or maybe he was missing a piece of the puzzle. Could be his nethermancers hadn't yet figured out how to get it out of the rock. He continued to gaze on the object, hypnotized by the endless void contained in the small sphere. More likely, he was waiting until his troops were prepared and the weather improved. If no one else knew how to find it, it would be safer here than in Coral. Whatever the explanation, it didn't matter. All that mattered was that Selen was in front of him, his for the taking. He moved toward it. Time seemed to slow, as it did in dreams. Questions swirled like the powdery snow. Should he try to use it here and now? Would he even be able to, or was its expenditure something that would require research and tests? The people from the stories had seemed to know how to use it intrinsically. Would its wisdom flow into him as soon as he touched it? What if he became immortal? What if the world ended before he did? He reached toward it. He held it in his hand, and it was heavy, yet light. A spark of green showed within it. And then it vanished. Dante screamed.
Chapter 32 Blaze would have paid all the money he'd ever earned, or would earn in the future, for a portrait of the look on Dante's face. Hidden in the world of Quicksilver, he dashed past the others, Weird, Old, Somber, and the two strangers, faces going wide with shock, and up the stairs Dante had helpfully built into the wall. He had to get out fast. Even with the Kelevert shell on hand, he figured he had 10 minutes, 15 tops, before he was forcibly discharged from the Shadowlands. The surrounding landscape was nothing but snowfields and busted chunks of rock. Awful cover. Unless the snowstorm picked up, he'd be visible for miles. He had to make it up the valley, to the south. That's where Dante had set up camp, and he'd surely return to it in time. But Blaze had to get into the cover of trees there. He'd only seen one good way down to the valley, the trail Dante's people had used to get to the butte. The same one Blaze had taken as he and Min followed them, darting from rock to rock, slipping into the shadows whenever they had to cross open ground. It would be dicey. He'd leave tracks. He could do what he could to conceal them by running on bare rock when possible, but he'd have to hope that Dante mistook his tracks for those of the others in his group. Down in the pit, Dante was shouting at the others, demanding to know what they'd done with it. As Blaze reached the top, Min fell in beside him, sprinting over the top of the snow. Somehow this held their weight. The ball of blackness in his hand felt as dense as iron, yet light as an empty shell. As if it were skimming on the surface of reality, much as he and Min were dancing atop the snow. They got down the butte and raced across the snowfield. The ground was level, and he ran across it as fast as he would down a paved road. The sun was hidden by a mountain of clouds, but in the world of Nether, shadows sparkled on the snow. Flurries skirled from the clouds. Maybe he wouldn't have to worry about tracks after all. Within 5 minutes of leaving the pit, they got to the edge of the valley and hurried down the switchbacks as fast as they dared. He began to get winded, his grasp on the Nether slipping. He had to hang on. If he could make it to the bottom and get just a couple hundred yards north of the cave, he'd leave no tracks to follow. Knowing he'd been followed and robbed, Dante would have the smarts to search around. But by the time his aimless search reached the place Blaze had rematerialized, his footprints would be obliterated by wind and snow. He had half a mind to leap to the bottom and see if he'd land as lightly as his steps did on the snow. But he stuck to the trail, forcing the Nether to stay with him. Halfway down, he began to fade, fast. He clung to the shadows with everything he had. He started to get lightheaded, legs going weak. As he started down the last set of switchbacks, the Nether yanked free from his grasp. He found himself abruptly real again. His feet sank into the snow mid-stride. He tripped and skidded down the path, clawing for purchase, snow billowing behind him. Blaze slid into open space. He wasn't sure which way was which, so he tucked his chin to his chest and hugged the black ball with the crook of his arm. He landed back first in a deep drift. Something banged into his hip. He rolled from the snow, aching and addled, and found himself staring up at a stranger. The man, by virtue of being a man, was not Min. He wasn't Dante, or any of the people Dante was traveling with. Odd, that. Blaze and Min had been watching Dante for 2 days and were positive his party included just 4 people. Peculiar that this stranger would be up here, then, given that here was the monster-infested mountains in the middle of winter. The man was lean and tall, and his jaw was angled like the head of a shovel or a snake. He smiled. It wasn't a smile Blaze liked. And grabbed the black orb from Blaze's hand.
"Should I thank you for delivering this to me?"
He spoke in a strong, pinched accent Blaze had never heard before. Blaze didn't like his tone, either. There was cruelty in it, and the wrong kind of confidence. The man grinned unkindly.
Then again, it would have been mine either way.
Blaze wobbled around, holding his head and making a show of it while he gathered his feet underneath him.
Who are you that I've just done this favor for?
Its owner.
That's funny, because the guy I took it from sure wasn't you. How about you hand it over before I'm forced to become rude?
The man's eyes twinkled.
Don't do anything you wouldn't do in front of a crowd.
People moved in the pines behind him. They'd been there all along, Blaze saw, but he'd had other things to be concerned about. A woman and two of the men looked like bad people. They were supported by a dozen other men who wore no uniforms but moved with the quiet surety of professionals. It all added up to one thing. He was dead.
Run!
Min's voice bounced between the valley walls. It took him a moment to home in on it. She was calling from somewhere in front of him, behind the stranger who'd taken Sullen.
Roughly the direction of the cave.
The others turned in surprise, casting about, but the man's gaze remained stuck on Blaze. Blaze lunged at him, but he danced back with agile steps. Fighting him for the ball would mean dying. As Blaze wasn't inclined to make a permanent trip to the Netherworld, he swerved left, heading straight toward Min's voice. Anyway, the ball didn't really concern him now. The man was clearly a foreigner. Let him do what he would in foreign lands. The important thing was that Selen had been kept away from Modigan and Dante.
Snow kicked from Blaze's heels. The man sighed. One of his people shouted.
Pines whisked past Blaze's face. He felt Netha streaking toward his back, and he hunched over, grimacing, waiting for the spear of force to strike his ribs. Ahead, a dark bolt raced toward him and continued past. The two energies met and burst over his back in a shower of black sparks.
Min ran toward him through the woods. He didn't ask where she'd been, just fell in beside her.
The strangers crashed through the branches behind them. An arrow whirred past. A second later, Blaze juked, and another arrow passed through the space he'd just occupied and thwacked into a trunk. Min pitched forward, stumbling. He slowed to help her catch her balance.
"Keep going!" she snarled.
He ran ahead. She pitched along, windmilling hands, grazing the snow. Rock crackled and roared, pluming snow and dust behind them. Men shouted in fear. Blaze glanced over his shoulder. A gap yawned in the ground. It wasn't all that long, but the men on the other side were running away in terror. He laughed and kept going. The slope surrounding the south edge of the valley loomed ahead.
What now?
Into the cave, Min panted.
You mean the easily accessible, enclosed space with no exit? If you want to live?
Further back, the man was yelling at his people in total gibberish. Some had resumed the chase, but Blaze and Min had a good lead on them. At the cliffs, Min motioned Blaze up first. He dashed up the makeshift stone rungs, and turned around to give her a hand up. When she was halfway up the carved ladder, another lance of shadows tore through the air. She flung up her hand. Again, the opposing nether exploded into black powder, wafting to the ground like negative flakes among the wheeling snowfall. She threw herself inside and shoved Blaze back. Stone groaned and flowed across the entrance, sealing them in total blackness.
I see, Blaze said. What about that air we need? Do you have a better idea?
Her voice sounded like it wanted to echo, but the space was too tight.
Well, please think of one before we suffocate.
Blaze bit his lip. It seemed pointless given the utter darkness, but he crawled around the little cavern, feeling his way along the walls for any hidden passages. Dragons who might be talked into an alliance, or automatic, self-feeding, repeating longbows. He He found a couple bags filled with squishy, sweet-smelling objects, whose outsides felt disturbingly like human skin. A few extra blankets, a pile of clattering cookware, but no tunnels out or tools that could turn the tides. Something slammed into the sealed mouth of the cave. Blaze jumped away, banging his back against the wall. Dust whispered to the ground.
"Well, that's another crash,"
Blaze winced. Daylight peeped through a crack in the wall, spearing the dust. Before he could speak, Min sealed it back up.
"I don't know how much longer I can last," she said. "Do you have anything left?"
He shook his head, then realized she couldn't see him.
"Mine gave out on the switchback. That's why I fell."
"I thought so."
She sounded sad, in a resigned way you might talk about the passing of a beloved old pet, a death that had been coming for a long time.
"I've still got swords. Nobody likes getting jabbed by swords."
A wallop of nether rattled the cave a third time. In the brief light, Blaze saw sweat sliding down Min's temples. She patched up the cracks again. Everything went quiet. The breathing seemed to fill the cave. Blaze became conscious of little else. As a kid, he'd loved catching bugs in jars, and had been heartbroken when, after finally capturing a scar beetle and going to sleep with it bottled beside his bed, he'd woken to find it on its back, legs crossed. That was when his mom had told him there was a spirit in the air, and that's why you needed to breathe. But breathing in used that spirit up. So in short, poke some holes in the lid of your jar next time, dummy. He'd done that next time, and had run into no other surprise suffocations across a childhood that went on to involve countless instances of bug hunting. Yet ever since, he'd been wondering how fast a person could use up the air in a room. For a while, it had even been a phobia. His mom had mocked him for leaving the door of the privy open, even when he was raising a stink. He'd gotten over it, for the most part, but now he was in a cave with a limited supply of that airborne spirit, and outside, men who wielded a spirit of a much darker kind wanted him dead. Just as he was readying to suggest Min open a hole for a peek outside, another bolt slammed into the wall. It went quiet after that, but it was quite possible the man's nethermancers were biding their time, waiting for him and Mim to come out for air.
"Well," Blaze said, after another couple minutes, "if I've gotten us killed, I'm terribly sorry about that."
Min laughed. Then laughed a little harder, surprised by herself.
"It's been quite an adventure.
Now that I've been away for a couple weeks, I know I've been wanting to leave Pocket Cove for a long time. Not for good, mind you, just long enough to breathe for a while. I love it there, but it's so claustrophobic."
"Please don't say that right now." She laughed again, wryly this time.
"We're not dead yet. You'll find a way out, I think. It seems to me that's what you do."
Blaze smiled, but he didn't feel as confident as she sounded. He'd recognized the look in the man's eyes. He'd seen it before. Samarand, Cassander, Modigan, Dante. People who got what they wanted, without fail, because they were willing to do whatever it took. After a while, the cavern began to warm up. He supposed that was their body heat doing its thing. He felt tired, but in a good way, like after a long day of sparring. He drew up his knees and rested his chin on them and started counting to 300. In 5 minutes, he'd suggest she open the wall, not all the way, enough to stir the air and get a look outside. He gasped, eyes wide but blind. He'd been asleep. There was something he'd meant to tell Min. It felt important. He furrowed his brow, but he couldn't remember it. And the way she was breathing, she must be asleep. He didn't want to wake her. not after all she'd done for him. He put his chin back on his knees. It was the best sleep he'd ever had.
Chapter 33. The Nether was slow to come, protesting like a child yanked from bed. The backs of his eyeballs were itchy, his hands shaky. He'd already pushed his limits on the day. But if one of the minister's sorcerers were inside the cave, some fiendish trap or rearguard, and what else could it be, other than an attempt to leave them exposed to the Kappas? Dante would need to draw on even more. Hanging from the ladder, he softened the stone and drew it away from the entrance. He glanced down at Sombo, who waited inside the tree line, nether at hand. C crouched beside Sombo, peering up at the cavern over the length of an arrow. Ast had a couple slim knives in his hand. Dante got out his torch stone, blew on it, and lobbed it inside the cave. It landed with a clack. He scrambled up after it, forcing the nether to stand ready. Dante thrust his head above the lower edge of the cave and nearly fell off the ladder. Inside, Blaze sat tangled in the blankets, blinking, chest heaving, face contorted as he shielded his eyes from the glare of the stone. He got out one of his swords, waving it clumsily. "Back, fiends!" "What?" Dante swallowed down the lump in his throat. He didn't understand how Blaze could be here, in the Wodens, sealed inside Dante's cave. Then it came together in his head with a violent crescendo of understanding. "Where is it?" Next to the entry, a lump lifted its head and squinted its eyes. Dante jerked back, a young woman, pretty, weathered from travel. "Hello," she said slowly. Dante could only stare. She was a stranger. He snapped his gaze back to Blaze. "Selen, the Black Star, you stole it and ran off like a thief. How did you do it?" He looked around himself. "And what the hell were you thinking hiding yourself in my cave? Did you think I wouldn't notice the shelter full of my things had mysteriously gone missing?" Blaze's brows beetled. "It was the guy, so like a quenched brand." Dante gritted his teeth and climbed inside. The woman moved to block him. He stared her down and crawled toward Blaze. "I don't care why you're here or what you think you're doing. Just give me back Selen." "I can't." Blaze's voice grew steadier. He breathed in and out, staring down at his hands, turning them back and forth in astonishment. "We're the only goddamn people for 100 miles. Don't act like it wasn't you." "Oh, I took it all right." Lyle's left nut. "You should have seen the look on your face. Then again, I probably looked just as silly when it was stolen from me." Dante reached for the collar of Blaze's cloak and pulled it tight, gathering the nether in his left hand. "If you don't..." "He's telling the truth," the woman said. "A man took it from us. Tall, mean, dressed in black. He had sorcerers with him. I had to close us inside the cave to protect us." Dante's stomach sank until he felt it might splash across the bare floor. A shrill noise sounded from the back of his head. "Did this man talk to you?" "Sure," Blaze said. "The usual death threats. He had an accent like he was holding his nose at my stench. Not from any part of Garsk I've ever been to." He sat down. "That's because he's not from Garsk." "Well, he certainly wasn't from Malin. The Western Cities?" "You're getting further and further away. Try the other side of the Wodens." Blaze cocked his head. "Across the mountains? What's even over there?"
"A maniacal killer and his massive invasion force," Dante said.
"And you just handed him the most powerful weapon in the world." He had more, but all the energy and anger drained out of him. He pressed his palms to his forehead. "Get down from here. We have to catch him." "I've discovered I don't have to do anything," Blaze said.
but Dante knew him too well not to hear the doubt that had entered his voice. Dante scooped up the torch stone and headed down the stone ladder. The others approached, lowering their weapons.
"What's going on?" C said.
"Nothing much," Dante replied. "My dearest friend stole Selin from me, and then my worst enemy stole it from him."
"The minister?" Her voice climbed. "What's he doing here? And for that matter, what's Blaze doing here? How is any of this possible?"
"Because your boss cuts himself every day of his life." Blaze stood 10 feet apart from the group.
"And he's got a bad habit of leaving the rags he cleans those cuts with lying around his room."
Dante glanced at the woman. "You're a nethermancer."
"So's Blaze," she shrugged.
"I bet," Dante laughed.
"That explains him,"
C said, jerking her thumb at Blaze.
"But what about the minister?"
"I have no idea. Maybe he followed our piece of stone. Or maybe he figured out what we were up to and beelined for Selin. It doesn't matter. We have to go after him right now."
Ast gestured at the falling snow. "We can't follow him in this."
Dante raised his eyebrows.
"If it's not stopping him, it won't stop us."
"It will be dark sooner than you think. Are we in condition to protect ourselves from Kappas?"
"Blaze, when did the minister take Selin from you?"
Blaze shrugged.
"We ran straight here. Couldn't have been more than 10 minutes.
Dante snorted.
"How did you get back here in less than 10 minutes? It took us 4 times that long."
"Magic?"
"Their tracks are all over the place. They can't be more than a half hour ahead of us. We're following them."
"You really expect me to come with you?" Blaze said.
"You don't understand what you just did."
Dante fought to keep his voice level.
"That man blames Narashtovic for a terrible disaster that befell his people centuries ago. Now he's going to use Selin to bring down the mountains. His armies will burn the city to the ground."
He walked forward, stopping a couple feet from Blaze.
"You may not give a shit about me, but you can't let my people face a second war so soon after the first."
"Are you being serious? Why would he give a damn about something that happened hundreds of years ago?"
"He's telling the truth," Min said. Blaze's head cranked around.
"How can you possibly know that?"
"Because I know what's on the other side of the mountains."
"We're wasting time," Dante said. "Come with me or go home, I don't care."
He turned and walked briskly along the tracks marring the snow. The minister's people had headed out double file, assuming they had turned around and these were the right tracks, but he could tell there were at least 10 of them, maybe double that many. At least 2 of whom were nethermancers. Meanwhile, he was exhausted. Somba was good to go, however. Additionally, the woman must have some skill with the nether. She must be from Pocket Cove. They were the only others who could move the earth, and had, in their way, taught him.
But he'd seen the rift she'd blasted in the earth. She'd sealed herself and Blaze in the cave, and she must have tangled with the minister's people before that. Much of their firepower was depleted. They were outnumbered, and the minister had Selin. For all Dante knew, the man could use it to make them all drop dead on the spot.
He doubted the minister would do that, though. That would mean forfeiting his attack on Narashtovic. However poor their odds might be then, they had a chance. So he hiked up the hill, trailed by the others, falling snow lining the folds of his cloak, and lodging in his eyebrows. The storm was growing worse. Gusts threatened to knock them down or blow them off ledges. The snow whirled so thickly that the minister's tracks had already begun to fill. Visibility shrank, a dwindling circle of color hemmed in by erratic walls of white. He crested the south ledge of the valley and could no longer see the cliffs to the north. Previously, this vantage point would have let him see for miles on all sides, but at the moment he could see no further than a few hundred yards. They wouldn't be able to see the minister's group until they were nearly upon them. In the short time it had taken to scale the rise, The sky had dimmed, like a dying torch stone. He knew they had to get back to the cave. Forget the Kappas, the storm alone might kill them. But as the others waited behind him, stamping their feet and sniffling, all he could do was stare into the blank and empty world. Blaze moved beside him. Come on, any more of this and we'll lose our lives along with the trail. He bumped Dante on the shoulder. Anyway, you've got a hell of a lot to explain.
That makes two of us, Dante heard himself say.
He took one last look around. A dozen emotions squirmed inside him, but they were as weak as newborn kits. He turned around and headed back down the trail. Twilight reached the valley before they did. By the time they'd climbed into the cave, and Dante narrowed the entrance to keep out the wind and snow, it was almost as dark outside as inside.
Save your breath, he said to no one in particular. I know we can't follow them. Even if we assume they're headed straight to Call, we don't have enough food to make it to the other side.
It isn't the end of the world just yet, C said.
You won your last war, didn't you?
And learned I never want to fight another.
Ast laughed wryly.
That doesn't sound like the sort of thing a person gets to choose.
Somber tapped his fingers against his knee.
Nothing is a foregone conclusion. Not until the Citadel falls.
Right, Blaze said. First things first, I don't know half of you. Second, since we're trapped in a hole for the foreseeable future, would anyone care to tell me what happened today? Hard though it is to believe, I came here to prevent disaster, not start a new one.
Dante rolled his eyes.
Great job on that front. If you hear a sudden rumbling, that's just the end of the world.
What were you intending to use Selen for, anyway?
He screwed up his mouth.
Let me guess. You wanted to live forever.
Or make yourself 50 feet tall, something amazingly self-centered, I know that much.
That's irrelevant. All that mattered was keeping it out of the hands of a maniac, which you were going to accomplish by taking it yourself.
Then your goal was hopeless to begin with.
While they were busy glaring at each other, C glanced around the circle of faces lit by the torch stone in the center of the cave.
I'm C. I'm the one who found you, Blaze. I'd tell you I'm sorry, but I'm not going to apologize for being good at my job.
Blaze laughed. With that attitude, it's no wonder you fell in with him. Anyway, in case the rest of you don't know me, my name is Blaze, and I intend to get the hell out of here again as soon as I can.
The others introduced themselves. After a short silence, C glanced at Dante.
So, should I fill them in? Any state secrets I should withhold?
Dante shook his head. We're all friends here.
She smirked, then started in on the story, summarizing long chunks of it. How they'd gone to Wesley for answers, found out about the cataclysm that had changed those lands forever. How the minister still bore a grudge 1,000 years later and intended to repay it very soon.
Dante corrected and expanded on a few of her points. She tended to focus on the most relevant facts while excluding bits of enriching context, but mostly let her talk.
He was trying to think of their next move, but kept circling back to what had just happened.
Holy shit on a throne, Blaze said at the end. In my defense, I had no idea about any of that. Probably because of that whole spyrish spies erasing decades of history thing. If it's any consolation, before coming this away, I did thwart Modigan's plans to take Selen. I'll pause to receive your thanks.
Dante looked up.
Modigan knew about it. I'm beginning to think I was the only one who didn't. Then again, we don't get a whole lot of news delivered to Pocket Cove, unless the gull's droppings are some kind of code.
Hold on a second. Min meant what she said. Do you really know how to wield the Nether?
Blaze donned his bluffing face. tucking the left corner of his mouth.
I don't know if wield is the right word. More like thrash about with while coming dangerously close to cutting off my own face. Why didn't you tell me you had the talent? I would have taught you.
Being your student sounds like a barrel of laughs. Anyway, I had no idea. It took months of practice for me to be able to touch the damn stuff. Dante lapsed into silence. He didn't know what to think. He didn't even know if he wanted Blaze's help with the minister. It wasn't just that Blaze had ruined everything. That was so far beyond the pale, Dante was incapable of holding it against him. So much had happened prior to that. They'd gone their own paths. Dante had been named the leader-in-waiting on the council, and had worked for years to make himself worthy of that mantle. All that time, Blaze had been away doing God's knew what. Lyle's balls had become a nethermancer. Dante didn't believe for a second Blaze had just discovered that potential within himself. Blaze had read The Cycle of Aron, spent years around Calais, and Dante and dozens of other sorcerers. In all that time he must have felt something. Yet he'd chosen not to pursue it. A decade ago, in the forest outside Bressel, after Dante had first displayed his powers, Blaze had been disgusted and afraid of the Nether. He'd nearly run off. Had Blaze continued to harbor the illusion that it was wrong, and had only recently changed his mind, most likely when learning to wield it was to his advantage? Or was it much simpler? Had he realized his ability would never be more than a fraction of Dante's, and had hidden it in embarrassment, preferring to become a master of swords than an apprentice of sorcery? Dante wouldn't blame him for that. Even so, it felt like a waste. There was no reason Blaze couldn't have learned both, supplemented his command of the steel with Aron's command of the stars. Perhaps in the end, neither one had known the other as well as they'd thought. Dante had always hidden certain dreams, like his ambition to follow in Cali's footsteps and extend his life beyond its natural span. Likewise, his ascension to High Priest of the Council, which had come much sooner than he'd expected. Still, his dishonesty hadn't come in the form of a blatant campaign of lies. He merely hadn't bothered to mention certain things. If Blaze had ever asked, Dante thought he would have told him the truth. But it ran deeper than that. Deeper even than the death of Lyra, the event that had prompted Blaze to run away while Dante lay unconscious in recovery. The problem was simple. Blaze thought the world was better than it was. That you could free the Norrin, or lead a city like Narashtavik without violence or strife. The war itself had proven that false. You could be a devout pacifist, but when outside forces came to take what was yours, your land, your freedom, your life, you had one choice. Bow down, or stand and draw your sword. Dante squeezed his eyes shut. The past and present were too sprawling and confused for him to look at all at once, let alone to make sense of. The only thing that did make sense was sleep. And food. They passed around flatbread and the last of the laurels. With few words, they slept. The storm quit a couple hours before sunrise. Its silence woke Dante, and he moved to the little porthole, but it was too dark to see much. He managed to sleep a little longer, eventually woken by shuffling noises near the small hole in the wall. It was Blaze, and he appeared to be attempting to pee through it. Dante rolled his eyes and swept open the wall. Outside, there was no sign of human tracks, just two lines of deep, round impressions, with a thin, shallow impression running parallel between them. Ast glanced through the valley. Kappa.
A water? Blaze said.
Giant monster, Dante said.
Is that what those things are called?
Are you coming with us? Blaze folded his arms. Narashtavik's not my home anymore.
And I'm not sure how much good I'd be in a war. He kicked around some snow. But I guess I bear some responsibility to help undo this.
Some? You delivered Selen straight into the minister's hands.
You weren't expecting him to show up either. He would have stolen it from you instead.
There's no way to know that.
Dante went to the ladder to get the rest of their gear from the cave.
All I know is that he took it from you.
While they readied, Ast studied the maps. He'd picked out a path back to Sol the night before, but an extra foot of snow had fallen overnight, and the clouds looked like they were ready for more. Grounds that would have been traversable yesterday might no longer be feasible.
I want to try this ridge, he said to Dante, tapping the map. It's going to be hard. We might wind up wasting time and have to turn around. But if we get over it, the glacial valley on the other side will get us out of here before things can get much worse.
Dante considered the squiggles representing the colossal peaks.
What are the risks?
Same as with any bad climb. But if we take our original route, I'm afraid we'll be snowed in.
Min can move earth, too. We'll try the ridge.
Ast took the lead. Dante behind him. The others strung out in a line. They headed up a long incline toward a tumble of short cliffs, topped by two great peaks. The ridge Ast meant to summit was strung between them. To both sides of their path, the ground fell away in deep ravines. The way forward snaked between any number of apparently impassable peaks. But if they could get across them to the glacier, Ast believed that would provide them with a relatively easy walk across 10 miles of flattish ice. After, they'd still have a long way to go, but they'd wind up bypassing the worst of what the mountains had left to offer. The ridge was only some 3 horizontal miles away, but Dante had spent enough time at elevation to know that didn't matter. What mattered was the vertical distance and the willingness of the rocks to let you climb them. They reached the cliffs and, after hiking up to 2 dead ends and backtracking, worked their way up to the plateau above. By that time, it was after 10 in the morning. They paused for lunch and to eyeball the path ahead. The clouds were darkening. But so far the snow was falling in such small flakes they could only be seen when they gleamed in the sun. The next leg was up a stretch of blue-white ice, too slick and steep for more than a rough layer of snow to stick to it. Not wanting to deplete their nethermancers, they hacked their way up with axes. At the roughest spot, they flipped the axes around and hammered their few spikes into the ice. It was rough going. Especially with their packs and cloaks. And it took a couple hours to scale 300 feet. Rock walls hung above them. These proved much easier to tackle than the ice. Dante shepherded the others to one side, then drew a staircase straight to the top. At the next cliff, men did the same. The two peaks soared to either side, hemming them in. They walked and sometimes crawled across a field of ice, then reached a seemingly impassable 50-foot rock wall that Dante surmounted in a matter of seconds with another staircase.
It would be unfair to claim any mountaineering records for this, Blaze said.
Dante stood back to examine his work.
You can take the wall if you prefer.
Up top, they found themselves faced with a rough span of cracked ice cemented between projections of bare rock. They threaded through the cracks, but were stopped 2/3 of the way across by a crevasse that spanned the entire ridge. After walking parallel to it, they found a spot where the gap was less than 3 feet wide.
What do you think?
Blaze tucked his gloved hands into his armpits.
Got a spare bridge in your pocket?
Dante glanced at one of the rocky upthrusts. Could melt a door through that instead. C grimaced, huffing in the thin air.
Forget how to jump? Before he could answer, she tensed her legs and sprung. She landed lightly on the other side, swooping to one knee to arrest any possible slide. Somber followed. Blaze raised a brow at Min. She snorted and took a long, hopping stride.